ever since the great space race launch with Sputnik in 1957 and peaked with Neil Armstrong taking one giant leap for mankind in 1969, the human race has been obsessed with getting back to the moon, or getting there at all if you're one of those Kubrick soundstage theorist people. But anyway, whether just to be cool, or get some cracking green cheese, or even colonization, America, as well as other countries, are planning to get back to the lunar surface in the next 2 to 3 years. But here at the Podfix Network, we have unearthed the true reason behind these future missions. Because there are Amazon women on the moon. It was 1985 and Universal was hard at work shooting Amazon Women on the Moon, which then, although ready to go in 1986, was not released in theaters until September of 1987. Described as a spoof of low-budget 1950s science fiction movies, interspersed with various comedy sketches and fake commercials making fun of late-night television, this anthology includes segments directed by Joe Dante and John Landis, as well as stars like Arsenio Hall, Joe Pantoliano, and Michelle Pfeiffer, to name a few. Over the next few months, the Podfix Network will be revisiting the sketches and commercials segment by segment, from Mondo Kondo to Roast Your Loved One to Reckless Youth. Plus, we'll break down the spoof movie Amazon Women on the Moon woven throughout this anthology as well. So buckle into your cockpit seats, adjust your space helmets, and prepare for launch as the Podfix Network goes to the moon.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
Hello and welcome to week 9, Amazon. Nine weeks of doing this, I still mess it up. It's
just start over. It's so easy to start over.
10 seconds.
You're like 5 seconds in.
Oh man. Folks, welcome. It's week 9 of Podfix.
You're not gonna start over.
I'll edit it out.
No, you won't.
You went Yeah, I'm starting to doubt that. Your reputation precedes you, Keith.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to week 9 of Podfix Goes to the Moon, our Amazon Women on the Moon rewatch series. And I am the chief officer of lunar flight activities. I think it keeps changing each week. But I am here. I am KG. And when I am not busy prepping the other members of the Podfix Network for a trip to the moon, I have a night job, and that is hunting monsters. With my good friends Derek and Terry, the Monster Hunters, who are here with me this week. Gentlemen, hello. Welcome.
Oh, thank is this you. For us to talk now? Okay. I know there's a format, but are format. You the I because I know Keith, you like the anagrams or the acronyms? Is that Chief Officer of Lunar
Activity
COLA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, didn't even do that.
Yeah. Interesting. Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Nifty. I didn't even think about that until now. I keep
9 weeks in and nobody pointed that out to you?
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, no, nobody else is quite as good with those breakdowns as you are. you're very good at the at putting together the acronyms.
Oh, I guess.
And help. Well, actually, you're even better if I just give you like a word and breaking out the opposite direction.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Folks, that is Derek. You Hello. Know him as the co-host with the most, RIP to Andy Rooney, from the Pop-Up Filmcast. Oh, many of you know him from that.
Blast from the past.
Yeah. And he is the head monster hunter. And of course, joining us as well is the Dr. Dre of Kansas, Terry Vicroy.
Hello. It's me. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm here as well.
I would call Terry the head monster hunter, too. He's the only one that keeps that ship afloat, to be honest.
Oh, well, yeah, he does. Well,
Terry,
that's
would have sunk long
what?
Ago.
Am I getting a promotion here on the podcast now of all time?
Pay gets tripled too.
Oh, look, good. Well, I get both your salaries when I get the promotion.
So. That's not much. I mean, look, if you can manage to pilot the Skooma, I'm sure you could pilot a rocket to the moon, of course.
Oh, yeah, they're very similar, I'm sure. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's both the deal with the devil in order to make it work, probably.
Yep, flip by the moon, you go give a nod to the old gray-bearded man in the sky as you float past.
Satan.
Mm-hmm. Satan again.
Sky Satan.
Sky Satan.
Oh, boy, I don't know if I'm on board with that one.
Sky Satan? Oh, man.
Yeah.
He's a little. He's pretty chill once you get to know him, but...
Yeah.
He can be a little bit rugged when you first meet him. Yeah. Let's just say that.
Lots of floods.
Yeah, he does do that, doesn't he?
Well, maybe, that's not a reason for us to head to the moon, just in case he decides to flood the planet. You know, we got to find some other place to go.
Yeah, he has no dominion over the moon, so we're safe.
Yeah. Folks, this week we are going to be covering another... the sketch Son of the Invisible Man, and also one of the fake commercials that they've been splicing in here called Art Sale. Now, before we get into that, Derek, you and I, we are of extremely similar age. We grew up in extremely similar area.
We grew up in the same area. Yeah. We grew up in the same town, Keith. We just didn't meet each other until high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever see this movie, Amazon Women on the Moon? No.
Nope. I knew of it, never saw it.
Yeah. I remember watching it quite a bit when I was young, and I've already probably explained the many different times that the Pet House Video segment that we watched in episode 2 was probably one of the reasons I snuck downstairs to watch TV after everyone went to bed quite often.
Was there nudity in it, Keith?
Oh, yeah. She walks around nude the whole time. Oh,
okay.
This is not, she just, you know, she lives in California. They don't care about that stuff. So she goes everywhere nude.
Oh, was that the premise of the sketch?
Yes.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Terry, you are you're slightly younger than both.
Oh, yeah.
Grow up in the same areas as us.
Nope.
Not even close. But had you ever heard of this before? Like, it had come up a couple times on Monster Hunters with our Skooma deep dives. I definitely mentioned this skit specifically. I think at one point in time when I saw that Amazon Women on the Moon had showed up. But had you ever seen this?
No, I'd never heard of it until we talked about it on Monster Hunters, I think. And I think, the first thing I ever saw from this was the Son of the Invisible Man. So
yeah,
but we didn't watch the whole thing. We mercifully cut it off.
We did, because it was one of our closing things. It's not really great for just listening along.
Yeah, it's not good audio content.
No,
it's very
not,
visual.
No.
Yes,
true. No, which is perfect for a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're gonna go over both of these today. In traditional fashion. And we're going to start with Son of the Invisible Man. Now, both of these were directed by Carl Gottlieb. And we brought him up, a handful of, probably back in episode 2 was the last time we talked about him. Just remind everybody, he's the guy who wrote the screenplay for Jaws, Jaws 2, Jaws 3D, The Jerk, Caveman, Dr. Detroit. And he's Emmy winner for The Smothers Brothers Show.
The Smothered Brothers. That was like banned from TV, wasn't it? Because it was too risque.
Really?
I think so. Yeah.
I never put risque with the Smothered Brothers.
It had like a warning in front of it or something like that. I think they said boob or something like that, probably. In the context of boobs. Who knows?
That will make every episode of the Monster Hunters quite risque then.
Well, I said in the context of boobs, like bosoms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll just throw out there, we don't use the word boob a lot on Monster Hunters, if you're curious.
Yeah, no, we don't.
There'd be other reasons.
So the first one that we're covering today, Son of the Invisible Man, it stars, the main star is Ed Begley Jr. And I did mention that Carl Gottlieb had won an Emmy. Ed Begley Jr. was nominated 6 years in a row without ever winning as a supporting actor in a drama series for Victor Erich. Erich, unless I mistyped that, on St. Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. And he never got it. He got nominated that many times. They didn't just go, all right, fine. Let's just give it to him.
That's a very weird amount of times to be nominated in a row and never actually get it. But then again, I guess in like the 80s, there wasn't as much stuff that could get nominated.
It's like Susan Lucci.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's a daytime Emmy. That goes on and on.
But she got like nominated like 20 straight years and never won.
Yeah. Which is just crap. She is great. Every time I used to watch that in the summers.
Yeah.
All my children. Overall, Ed Begley Jr. has 341 acting credits. They're all, for the most part, just one-offs here and there, with the exception of St. Elsewhere. He was in one episode of The New Leave It to Beaver. So that kind of can connect us back a little bit to...
As himself?
No. As Whitey.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And most recently, he's in Better Call Saul and Young Sheldon.
Oh, he's still alive. Hmm.
Yeah.
One is a fantastic show. The other is a spinoff of the Walter White show. I'm just joking. I've never seen either.
I have not gotten to the end of Better Call Saul. I'm like in season 2.
I thought he was a young Sheldon. Don't spoil it for me.
Big Sheldon.
He gets old.
He becomes Big Sheldon at the end.
He gets old after a while. Yeah. A couple of little bits here. He produces and sells an all-natural household cleaning product called Bagley's Best.
Mm-hmm. He's very green. He was like the first like big outspoken green celebrity, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was so much so that he was named Environmental Affairs Commission in 1993 mm-hmm. and the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy in 1994, which then he quit that job when he realized that they were using a lot of paper and killing a lot of trees and like the stuff that they had sent out, like their paraphernalia and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Their propaganda, I guess. Also, he played Boba Fett in an NPR radio dramatization of Return of the Jedi in 1996.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah.
He's no use to me dead. That's all he says, isn't it? What else can he say?
Yeah, I don't think he has like any lines. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's kicked in the face at one point, I think, or something.
He goes, "Oh, it's Return of the Jedi." I don't think he talks all in that, does he? He nods.
He yells,
"No disintegrations."
That's an Empire.
Yeah, an Empire.
And that's Vader telling him no disintegrations, and he just scoffs at him like he's upset.
As you wish.
Yeah. I don't know what he says in that. I don't know. Maybe
he doesn't
maybe
say anything.
In the...
He gets kicked into the Starling. Oh,
yeah,
maybe
you're
in
right.
The radio drama, maybe he says a lot more stuff.
I mean, I'd love to be cast in a radio drama where I have no lines. I just have to sit there.
What if they wrote like a bunch of like high society lines for Boba Fett?
Hello, good sir, my friend Jabba.
Dear dear Jabba, why do we have to do it this way? You know, it's like he's better than thou, and he's drinking his blue milk with his pinky up.
Oh yeah, well that's kind of like how he is, you know, where you see glances of him like checking out the dancers in Jabba's palace, and then
you
know, he like turns around, and then that's the last we see of him until he gets kicked in the face.
Mm-hmm. I dropped this guy off over a year ago. I'm still sitting here.
He's just standing there, but he gives the nod to Princess Leia. Soto.
Oh yeah, he recognizes that she's like the undercover, right?
No, because she uses the thermal detonator, and when he gives in, Boba Fett gives him the nod of approval. Good job.
Oh, he's like,
yeah, that's the way a real bounty hunter does it.
I respect. Yeah, he respects that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of depth to this guy, isn't there?
So Bagley nodded on a radio drama.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, director Joe Dante, who does about five or six skits during
sketches, maybe?
Director Joe Dante, who does about five or six sketches during this, he was the last director to join onto the film, and he was disappointed to actually see that this segment was already picked up by Carl Gottlieb, because he actually really wanted to do this one.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Now, I picked this and picked you guys to come on because we watched a bit of this and talked a bit about it on the Monster Hunters because it really kind of plays in a spoof of the old Universal Pictures, Universal Monsters type stuff. It even gives you the old Universal Pictures like opening with the plane flying around the globe. Nowadays, we get to see that, weird globe from space. I don't even know if it's something flying around it. Whatever's on the DVD that we watched, Terry. I don't know. It's very, very odd. But we get
so
some
is
very...
the original not like from space? Where is it shooting?
Yeah, well, it is from space, but like it's just like a plane that like you can tell it's just
that's
like
true.
That's
like a giant plane. Yeah. That's as big as the Earth almost. Yeah.
Somebody's just spinning a globe around basically with a little plane around it.
And... Yeah.
If that plane were to scale, that'd be like an escape vessel. Like the Earth's blowing up. Get all of our richest and most successful people on this plane. It'll orbit the Earth until it's habitable again.
And it's just like a biplane. It's not like anything fancy.
It's just a big United Airlines plane.
This isn't going to get us very far into orbit. Don't worry about it. We'll be
fine.
We
need to get into space so we can float.
Yeah. We even get some very classic Universal Monster sounding music at the beginning as well. It gives you, puts you right into the vibe. And Son of the Invisible Man comes up over the screen as a man is approaching like a tavern, like a bed and breakfast or something. I don't know.
Can I say real fast that this sketch that's what 3 minutes long.
Yes.
Captures the old Universal movie like feeling to a T, as opposed to what was that werewolf thing we watched on Disney that was supposed to be like an old Universal monster movie?
Oh, Werewolf by Night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but doesn't really have that feel. It feels like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy sort of thing. This was like on the nose, like almost too much, right? It's like, okay, we get it.
It's perfect. Yeah. It looks just like the Invisible Man, like original movie, like the lab, the bar downstairs, like everything looks almost exactly the same. It feels like, or he just has that same feeling, which it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. He just went right back to where his father did all this stuff originally.
Yeah.
And that says, Jonah's name's Griffin. We see him when he's first walking up. He's got a trench coat on, hat, sunglasses, even though it's at night. His face is wrapped up in bandages. Then we cut the inside, and it's a lab. You know, as you mentioned, it looks like a lab, but it's in like a hotel room or
it's a rented room above a tavern.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And someone knocks on the door, and the man that we now know is Griffin, he, without his hat, but he's sitting there all alone, tells whoever it is he doesn't want to be disturbed, obviously, unless your name is Trent, I guess. His best friend, who he has called to come hang out with him. Now, I didn't notice this at first, but I'm thinking about it now. Like, the way that Griffin is dressed and all the rest of the people are dressed does fit into that, but like Trent seems to just be wearing like a suit coat, like a normal, like more modern outfit.
It didn't take me out of the setting at all. I didn't really notice that.
No, but it's almost like is this guy hanging out in like a not like a Renaissance fair thing,
but men's warehouse? For the men's warehouse.
Yeah. To the Renaissance. Yeah, and he just didn't change his clothes yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trent enters the room and he is shocked immediately to see his friend's face all wrapped in bandages. And Griffin's, hey, don't worry about it. It's nothing's wrong. He's finally done it. He's duplicated his father's formula for invisibility.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. He points to a picture on the wall and it's of the Invisible Man, but it's just like a hat and a pipe.
Yeah, it's like waving or something. I can't remember.
He just took like a portrait, nice little photo of him and then hung it up on the wall, which if he's just renting this room, why does he have a picture of his dad hanging on the wall?
It brings it with him everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's right on top of a suitcase. He pops open a suitcase and there's a picture of his dad. He gives it a kiss, hangs it on the wall.
Yeah. He's scared he'll forget what he looks like. So he just brings it with him.
This is for you, Papa.
You say so he doesn't forget what he looks like?
Yeah.
Yeah, that too. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He then admits he spent the past 5 years injecting himself with every chemical known to man.
Yep, that's going to work out. I've been trying that for a while, and I still haven't turned invisible.
The monsterism on the left side of Terry is counterbalanced by the frailty on the right side.
Much more of a Jekyll and Hyde situation over here.
Simultaneously, though.
Yeah. Well, you're still a young man. There's no way you've gone through every chemical. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, that's true. I'm probably halfway through it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Trent kindly reminds him that this whole thing drove his father mad. But
that's what I've told the old man. I've been on the stuff for over a week now, and I'm still perfectly sane.
Which I like. He says that and then follows it with like a very maniacal laugh and plans for world domination.
Mm-hmm.
That might be my favorite part of the whole sketch is him like, yeah, I'm perfectly sane. And you're like, I just love that delivery. It's really funny.
Yep. And he needs Trent as his visible partner because he later admits that he hasn't made a reagent to make himself visible again.
Yeah, he hasn't been in a rush, though.
Yeah.
Because it works so well. But that's just like the Invisible Man. He needed his inside guy, but the inside guy's like, this dude's fucking nuts. Oh, can I swear on this, Keith?
Sure.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I think I've already done it 100 times, but.
Yeah, Griffin basically, I mean, he says he's just been having too much fun,
mm-hmm.
Which is why he hasn't gotten around to making the reagent. And he starts to unravel these bandages, and you get a look at Trent, and Trent's just like, what is going on here? And Griffin's like, I could tell by your stunned expression that you're pretty impressed. But it's really the opposite, because we see then that Griffin is not invisible at all. And he clearly thinks he is, including he makes this dramatic gesture, I like, of removing the fake nose.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which he probably just assumes Trent is seeing floating around in the air, and it's just, it looks silly on him in the first place. He then takes off his gloves and goes, ooh, look, Ma, no hands.
And this is perfect. Like, just like the original Invisible Man, where, like, he just is nuts and he's running around doing all these, like, jokes and, like, waving things around. It's just funny to see it in a different perspective like this, where you actually see the guy moving around and throwing things and stuff. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's the opposite of the weirdly sexy Invisible Woman, where she's putting on stockings.
Yes. Yes, it's slightly disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now Trent is still looking on in disbelief, and that's because Griffin is now stripped down to just his shirt and tie, and he starts prancing around. This is when he starts going, "Ooh!"
Never see your shirt. Drink a glass. I can't remember what he said.
Ever see your shirt? Make a phone call. Ooh, pretty scary, huh? Ooh,
that's what it was.
Yep.
Like, no, because yes. You're making that silly ooh sound. So even if you were invisible, you sound silly. And now finally, despite Trent telling him there's no need to go all the way with it, Griffin's like, no, we are. He strips down and he starts to head out of his room and heads to the tavern area. And he says, Trent, follow the sound of my voice. Let's have some laughs. Being invisible is the best, which close caption said, come on, let's have some pretty visible is abyss.
It both work for me, mm-hmm. But being invisible is a blast. And
he said firsthand knowledge.
Yes. Yeah. But he had said that he's having too much fun. And you're like, what the hell is he doing to have so much fun? And I think we're about ready to find out, because I love this part.
Yes.
This part is to me is the best part of this whole sketch here, this 45 seconds to
this minute. Takes a big another kind of a left turn I didn't expect. Mm-hmm.
And it starts because they start going there, and you see it cuts to the tavern area, and you see this girl, and she just looks down the hallway to where they're coming from, and she's like,
hey, here comes the Invisible Man again.
So he's been doing this all the time.
Yep.
But he said, look, it's been a week and nothing's happened. So he's done this like every single night, and nobody has questioned it.
They just let him do it. They humor him. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And they all play right along with it. Trent goes around, he's disrupting a game of checkers, darts, etc. In fact, the one patron's like, oh my, what could have happened? It must be a ghost.
It's a ghost playing checkers, and he grabs the dart and he flips it around and almost makes a bullseye, then brings it back, then brings it to the bullseye. And everyone's just sitting there, get it over with, Invisible Man. We want to get back to our stuff.
But this time, the only real difference is this time Trent's there, and Trent has already told someone to go get some help. And the cops come in, and Trent he's right here, points over to the naked Ed Begley Jr. And he tells them, hey, go easy on him. He's not really dangerous. And they tell Griffin to get moving, and he just kind of walks past him going, oh, you have to find me first. And he's still doing the ghost thing. And they do. They grab him. They just, and he's like, what?
Yep.
And as they're shuffling out, you see one cop puts his hat over Griffin's wing-wang.
Yep.
And they shuffle him out of the bar. Now, for those of you who listened to episode 2 of this, you're familiar with the next part, because just as the scene ends, we get Murray. He's still trapped in the TV. And he comes walking on, and he just yells,
Selma!
I was so confused by what just happened.
I was
like, oh, what a fun sketch. And then at the end, it's like, oh, dear. There's a weird man appeared yelling Selma. I was like, is this part of it? Just one of those, so random humor things I don't understand.
Outside of the three parts of the Amazon Women on the Moon, the actual movie, fake movie that they put in here, outside of those three parts, there's no other real callbacks from sketch to sketch except for Murray.
And so he just like appears every once in a while going like, Selma, because he's like lost. What's the deal?
He had a TV and he points the remote at himself and he gets trapped in the TV.
Oh.
And his wife, Selma, hasn't figured out how to get out of it yet. Yeah.
Oh, so she's watching the program and then I see.
Yeah, so she must have changed the channel to this at some point in time. Okay. And I think he comes up during the credits at the end as well, that he's still kind of trapped in there.
Has anyone suggested bringing in the little lady from Poltergeist?
To get him on TV? I don't think anybody did, no.
That's the only way you're going to get that guy out of there.
He's trapped to the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody I didn't know rope. Anybody in the previous 8 episodes.
So. No, Vlado did not mention that at all when we discussed this
Vlado,
with him.
You should have brought it up. Can I say that landing a sketch is very difficult? If you watch Saturday Night Live, you'd know that it's difficult. This one ends in the worst and the wrongest way, in my opinion. Because he's been doing this for how many days? The cops should come in. Mm-hmm. And what's his friend's name? Griffin?
Trent.
Trent.
Yeah.
Trent should be like, here he is, officers. And then they should play in with it because I'm sure they've been there every day.
You know,
last week, right?
Because I haven't seen this whole thing in quite a while. And because we cut it off early during the Munsters episode, I never went back and rewatched it. I was expecting that. Like, I was expecting them to come in and arrest Trent and be like, all right, buddy, what are you doing? What kind of, you know, trouble are you causing here?
I was looking for like a little dance number or song number or something or anything where they play along with him being invisible and naked.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of falls flat. Like, it just kind of ends. It feels like there's not like really a big like punchline or anything. It's just like, oh, now let's take him to jail.
The punchline is, you can't touch me there, because they put their hat over his wing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's very confused at how they've even found him, because he still doesn't understand that he's not invisible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, I guess, so if he's done this over and over during the week, I guess, like, all right, after like the third time, you're like, oh God, here he comes again. Well, like on the first time, wouldn't you have called the cops on and be like, naked dude running around here?
Well, maybe they would have called the police, but then they would have realized he thinks he's invisible. Like, they would have just been like, oh, and then the police come and they're just like, put the hands up, you know, like, oh, hold on a minute, let's see where this goes.
Right.
He's invisible. And then so they all just sit there and watch, and they're like, so it becomes this like uproarious thing the first time. And they're like, okay, he's gone. He goes back upstairs, the cops sleep. The second day it happens, you're like, okay. And then like the third, and by the fifth time, like this one, everybody, it's the invisible man. They're like, oh God. Put your hand over your cup before he pees in it or something, right?
Yeah. I also want to know, like, what else has he done previously? Like, because I imagine, like, the first time you come through, you try to pull that stuff, somebody's going to punch you.
You'd think.
You go to grab somebody's beer and make it look like, ooh.
Yeah.
The beer magically magically disappearing, and it's just, the guy steps up and punches him instead. And maybe that's why they never called the cops. They knocked him out or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and he just woke up back in his bed.
Yeah.
What happened?
Oh, and they had wrapped him back up, and also he never noticed the black eye that he had. Then just went,
like, clearly never looks in a mirror. So
no, there's no mirrors in that entire lab of his.
Mm-mm.
But overall, what'd you guys think of this?
I really like the sketch. I think it's pretty funny. I loved how they nailed the vibe of those Universal Monster movies. I really like those old movies, and it's fun to see them like do such a genuinely good job with the setting, and like the acting is very similar. There's some characters, some of the side characters kind of reminded me of characters from The Invisible Man. Like, just the setting is really good, and I mean, it's just a really funny twist on The Invisible Man too. Mm-hmm. Like a play, but like you said, Dirk, the ending, I think it just kind of ends.
Isn't there actually a Son of the Invisible Man movie, all like an actual movie or something like that that we talked about once?
I think he has a son of some sort, but I don't know if it's called Son of the Invisible Man. I think it's Invisible Agent.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, Invisible Agent. That's the one. Yeah, because he figures out the formula and then goes to work for the government or something like that.
Yep, he goes fights in World War II. Yeah.
Yeah, alongside Herman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah. All right. Derek, what about you?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Like, I didn't find the first half is funny because we had watched it relatively recently, but it's well done. Like, the conceptually A+, right? Concept,
yes,
on point. I love the coming down the stairs and nobody is alarmed. They're just like, oh, again. I love that. I think that's great. I just didn't like the end. The cops taking him away seemed weird. Seemed wrong.
Yeah, makes you feel a little different about every time the monsters don't land an episode.
Which is every time.
All right. Folks, I very much enjoyed this. I've enjoyed every bit of this I've watched.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, I really
all 9 episodes so far. You've enjoyed every one, huh?
Yes, I really enjoy this movie.
Oh man.
All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Folks,
we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're gonna have a commercial break.
We're gonna come back and have a commercial break after the commercial break.
Well, I can't wait.
Not long ago, there were only 3 television channels, and the cheaply made family man comedy was king. Turning the dial would only give you another glimpse into a suburban nuclear family with a breadwinner husband, a stay-at-home wife, and the occasional talking horse. That is until 1964, when one show dared to take a glimpse into the lives of terrible monsters that lived next door. The Munsters premiered that September, and well, America has yet to recover. The Munster Hunter shuns the millions of hours of original shows that are available at the press of a button to take a look back at a 60-year-old comedy about a Frankenstein monster and his grotesque family.
He reaches down, he just grabs her by the butt and lifts her up.
Yep. Yeah. Instead of opening the window, he punches through the window. Which, I mean, this is your damn window, man.
By the way, he's trying to catch the raven out of the clock.
Oh, is that what he's doing to feed the cat?
Yeah.
I was very disinterested, to be honest. The Munster Hunters, available every Monday wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, folks, welcome back. Episode 9 of Podfix goes to the moon. KG, along with fellow Munster Hunters Derek and Terry. Look, each week I've been trying to make sure these kind of are very similar in length episodes. So I've either been... it's a longer sketch, it's by itself, or sometimes do a sketch and then one of these fake commercials. We all know I'm a big fan of fake commercials, and there's a lot of them in Amazon Women on the Moon. And the one that we're going to cover today is called Art Sale. This, again, was directed by Carl Gottlieb, we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. It also stars John Engel as Felix Van Damme, the curator of the Cosmopolitan Museum of Art. John was the 1998 winner in Soap Opera Digest's Outstanding Male Scene Stealer.
Wow.
Yeah. He was on 506 episodes of General Hospital as Edward Quartermain and Father McBride from 1993 till 2012. By the way, he died in 2012.
Oh.
Did he play twins? Is that why he had two names?
Well, I'm guessing Edward Quartermain got killed off sometime around 2004 because he did 79 episodes of Days of Our Lives as Mickey Horton from 2004 to 2006. And yes, probably came back as Father McBride.
Oh, or maybe he faked his death and then like they found him again as a father this time.
Yeah, he had amnesia or something.
Yeah, as soon as the contract was negotiated out, his amnesia came back.
I think when you have amnesia, the first thing you do is join the priesthood.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Makes sense. Like, what was I? I don't remember who I am. I must have been a priest.
Well, obviously. It's the most common career, yeah.
Yes.
Well, if it ever happens, I'll let you know.
I feel like...
And luckily, you don't need that much training, so you can just kind of hop in and do it. So, at least that's what I do.
Yeah, it seems like drop in... hit the ground running type of career.
Oh yeah, every Sunday I just go drive around a bunch of different churches, just hop up on the podium for a little bit and surprise everybody. They love it.
Yeah, it's like an internship.
yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
What's the cool priest that comes from down to town? Call me Father T.
Oh yes. Oh yeah, yeah. And I say how it is, you know, people really like my I'm like down to earth. I'm really relatable and
coming with a guitar. You know, if Jesus were around today, he'd probably sound a little
like this.
Start playing some heavy metal.
Start playing some heavy metal.
Yeah.
Some death metal. I just start headbanging. Oh yeah, windmilling with my
God. Praise.
Beautiful. Yep. That's what I do every Sunday. So,
yeah, the whole congregation is banging their head.
Oh, yeah.
They replace the pews with a mosh pit. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the whole crowd is just going nuts. Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. So Art Sale, I mean, it's a pretty simple thing overall. It's a spoof on like the old commercials that'd be on late at night for businesses. Everything must go out of business, etc. Except this is it's the Cosmopolitan Museum of Art, which, as Felix tells us, has amassed what many consider to be the finest collection of art anywhere, and now it can all be yours.
Everything's got a Van Gogh, go, right? There's even a Mona Lisa in there, which I'm pretty sure has been in the Louvre for.
Yeah, I don't think it's supposed to be there, but
yeah.
Maybe the Louvre bought it because it was a very good price.
Oh yeah,
$19.99. Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We get the camera zooms out, see the whole museum front, and a giant out of business sign unrolls, and he says, "Ah, we lost our lease."
Yeah.
Just matter of fact, just saying it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that museums had like fundraising things all the time, probably to make sure that didn't happen, but who knows? You get a bunch of people. They look like they're walking around with, looks like a rummage sale, but with highly valuable art. There's an older woman and a younger lady. They're fighting over a statue. And I like this, he kind of runs down the whole thing. Like he says,
"We're talking Rembrandts, Botticellis, Gauguin, Cezanne, Matisse, Renoir, and the chairman of the board, Leonardo da Vinci."
20 points over at the Mona Lisa, $59.99. I mean, who can pass that up?
That's a steal. Yeah,
it is a steal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He keeps walking through the museum. Art's being boxed up left and right, and there's a sign that says "As is, no refunds." And then he points to a sarcophagus, which looks very similar to the one that Herman hung out in one of our Munster episodes.
Yep.
Yep. It's from the Ramses. He could be. From the Ramses dynasty, normally 14 million, now just 19.95, and big great prices, like basic font flashing up on the screen. And this is the part I think that I really like about this one. This commercial is buy now and get the original Declaration of Independence for free.
Yes.
So that's the first person who calls in and buys something that, and like the commercial is only good until one person buys something, I guess.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, I would think anyone that's savvy that's watching it would buy everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially nowadays with eBay. I mean, yeah.
Well, even then, like, why would you not want all of that stuff?
I don't have enough room.
Mm, yeah.
I have to move some Lego stuff.
That's short-sighted, Keith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. you don't have a showing room for all your antiques and artifacts?
Well, no.
Stuff is guaranteed to appreciate. Do you remember the commercials for like Elvis plates, hand-painted with Elvis on them? Those things were guaranteed to appreciate.
I have one of those bits of Michael Jordan.
Oh my God, Terry, this was a thing. It's probably before your time, and I hate to bring it up like that, but there used to be a big thing on TV about collector's plates.
Plates you eat off of.
Yes, like china. Okay. Like a
plate. Yeah, but nobody's ever eaten off them. They come in like a little wooden frame that's like rounded.
Ooh, okay.
You can hang it.
There's like a celebrity painted on them. Elvis was a big one. Elvis plates. Plates painted with a picture of Elvis on them. They're guaranteed to appreciate, but you have to hop on them now. Plates like that sold 5 years ago are now worth at least 10 times what people paid for them.
Really? So it actually did go up.
That's what they would say in the commercials.
Yeah.
Oh.
If you paid $20 for that Elvis plate 5 years ago, it's now worth $200. Like if somebody would buy it for $200.
How much are they worth now? I wonder.
Probably right around what you paid 15? For them in the '80s, like $20.
Yeah.
Maybe less.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. I've got the Michael Jordan one. I've also got one that's got a dog painted on it.
Yeah.
Just any dog, or is it a specific
it's
dog?
It's a Cocker Spaniel.
Was it your dog? Was it?
It's a Cocker Spaniel. I had one at one time.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Herbie.
Big car?
No. Burger King had an ad campaign with a mascot named Herbie for a while. Herb. I think they didn't call him Herb, but
a man?
Yeah. The guy with some glasses, bald, I think, if I remember right. And that's what the dog was named after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at some point in time, somebody gave that to me at like Christmas. Nice. When we had him. For a very short time, which at the time I was only like 12, so giving me a plate was like what?
But little did you know they're giving you a fortune that you could retire on.
And I don't think the dog ones were gonna add up. The Elvis ones definitely. And I'm sure the Jordan one's probably worth something.
I don't know. I just shared a link to eBay page for Elvis plates. Most of them sit in that $5 to $10 range.
What? No.
You can buy them with a bunch of Beanie Babies, probably.
I don't know if they. I mean, this guy's. I assume it's a guy because who else would want $300 for 7 Elvis plates? Or best offer.
I bet you there were some Munster plates at one time.
I'm sure there were.
Yeah. All the stuff as Felix then tells us, those plates, also decoration and pens, perfect for any den or playroom. And you can add your own name for fun. And I want to mention this because when they show somebody signing it, the signature is being signed on the free gift is fictitious producer Samuel L. Bronkowitz, who's the producer of the little film within a film, Amazon Woman on the Moon. Mm. He was also featured in part of Kentucky Fried Movie also.
I've seen that one.
Yeah. This is actually an unofficial, was supposed to be a sequel to that, but they couldn't get the rights to do that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And of course, Derek, how you mentioned before, it closes out by saying the Cosmopolitan Museum of Art.
Every Van Gogh must go.
That's a great line. Great line.
Yeah. So I look, it's, is it the best of the commercials that they put in this? No, but it's still got some fun stuff to it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And learning about the whole thing that they had, you know, the signing of, you know, one of the producers from like little things like that, that back in 1987, I never would have even caught on to or noticed.
Yeah, I like the. I also like the. Yeah, they're like encouraging you to sign the Declaration of Independence with your mm-hmm. friends, like when you buy it.
Yeah, but again, like once somebody buys that once, then what do they put up? Like the Magna Carta, or like, I mean, what else do they?
It's a Magna Carta.
I mean, what else ends up being? Because again, only one person can buy that. But you know, look, you grab a sarcophagus for $19.95, you get the free Declaration of Independence.
You don't know what's in that sarcophagus either.
No. Oh, that. Oh man. Because nowadays you can do a
mystery box,
a YouTube unboxing thing. Yeah.
I think a lot like when we talked about the monsters and they cracked open the sarcophagus, disease flies out of it.
Thousands of ants and
thousand-year-old disease.
Mm-hmm. So that wraps up this episode of Podfix Goes to the Moon. You've heard a commercial about it earlier, but folks, you can check out Derek and Terry along with myself weekly as we watch a 60-year-old sitcom about a Frankenstein monster and his grotesque family. Correct?
Yes.
Right? But, yep. That I think I correct. Got it all right
very,
there.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Go to www.monsterhunters.com. Get all the details there. Gentlemen, thank you for hanging out.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
thanks for having us. Yeah.
If you head down the hallway over there, somebody over there will help kind of get you fitted for your spacesuit.
You're dropping us off on the moon. Okay. We're just staying here. Oh,
nice.
Huh.
Yeah, no, you guys go over there. I mean, look.
It's a one-way.
Everyone who's seen Apollo 19, you got to kind of have some backup plans. So I guess when one of our other ships blows up or something like that, then you guys, we need to make sure you guys are ready to go.
Okay. Yep.
Don't worry, Terry. I've read and seen The Martian. We'll be able to.
Okay. Okay.
So. Oh, nice. A lot of poop potatoes. Excellent.
I think everything's going to work out just fine.
Mm-hmm. Just fine.
Yeah. So folks, come back next week. I have no idea who I'm talking to next week, but somebody will be here. And, until then,
Ooh,
pretty scary, huh? Ooh.
Podfix Goes to the Moon is a Podfix Presents series. Episodes are hosted by me, Keith Gala, recorded, mixed, and edited, yes, that's right, edited, at the Pop-Up Filmcast Studios. This episode was executive produced by Derek Lascock and Terry Vicroy. Check out Derek, Terry, and myself on the Monster Hunters podcast. Go to www.monsterhunters.com to find out all about it. Music for this episode was curated from the Free Music Archive and features Alex Productions' motivational cinematic corporate movie, Surge, Quadrado's Rocket Adventure. Keep up with the Podfix Network on following social medias at Podfix on Twitter, at official_Podfix on Instagram. Join the Podfix Nation on Facebook. Subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you listen to your podcasts. And finally, check out all the details on the network and all its shows at www.podfixnetwork.com.